A woman accused of murdering her husband in Glacier Park will stand trial in December as scheduled. Good evening, I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us how insurance companies are scrambling to figure out what to do with President Obama's decision to change implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with a state wildlife official about the difficulty of reestablishing black-footed ferrets in Montana. A federal judge has rejected a request to dismiss a murder indictment against a Montana woman accused of pushing her new husband to his death in Glacier National Park. U.S. District Judge Donald Malloy also rejected prosecutors' request today to delay the December 9th trial of 22-year-old Jordan Graham. Graham testified that she instinctively pushed Cody Johnson away when he grabbed her arm during an argument, causing the July 7th fall. Graham had asked Malloy to dismiss the murder charge, saying an FBI agent improperly interviewed her and that her statements were distorted in the criminal complaint. Malloy dismissed that motion and another by prosecutors, who sought a delay while they awaited the results of DNA tests on a piece of cloth found near the 25-year-old Johnson's body.
And in other news from around the state, Governor Steve Bullock says he supports Lieutenant Governor John Walsh in the developing Democratic primary for U.S. Senate. Walsh was Bullock's running mate last year in their successful election. The former National Guard commander is an early favorite of many Democrats for the party's nomination to replace the retiring U.S. Senator Max Baucus. But former Lieutenant Governor John Bollinger recently announced he is switching parties to run as a Democrat for the office. His former boss, Brian Schweitzer, has said he is not taking sides in the fight. But Bullock said today that he is sticking with his initial decision to back Walsh. Both U.S. Senators Baucus and Tester are helping Walsh. National Party leaders irked Bollinger by trying to convince him to stay out of the race.
Governor Bullock says an expansion of the state's Medicaid rolls would have brought some assurances amid the turmoil surrounding the health care law's rollout. The governor earlier this year backed a plan to expand Medicaid to the working poor earning less than 138% of the poverty level. He was opposed by Republican legislative leaders. The U.S. government would have paid for most of the expansion as part of the federal health care law's effort to get everyone covered. Bullock says his opinion is unchanged by the problems in the implementation of other aspects of the health care law. He says Medicaid expansion would have ensured coverage for thousands. Republican Senate Majority Leader Art Wittig says, quote, doubling down on Medicaid, end quote, would make things worse and expose the state to future costs.
Montana insurance companies are looking over their options after President Obama's announcement yesterday regarding the Affordable Care Act. The president says some insurance plans about to be canceled for not following the new health care law will be allowed to continue for one more year. Montana's insurance commissioner says the announcement throws years of planning for Obamacare into a tailspin. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce has the story.
President Obama's announcement Thursday was his effort to make good on a promise he made while fighting for passage of the Affordable Care Act. A promise saying if people like their current health insurance plan, they will be able to keep it if the act is implemented. That turned out not to be true. In Montana alone, about 26,000 insurance plans were slated to end for not complying with Obamacare. That is to say, they weren't generous enough to meet the law's minimum benefits. So the president now says people with those stripped-down plans can be grandfathered in for one more year. Montana Commissioner of Securities and Insurance Monica Lindeen is not happy.
Well, it sounds okay. It's much more complicated than that.
Montana insurance plan rates need to be approved by Lindeen's office. All of these plans were going to end. So if they are going to continue, the companies have to put forward new proposals to her office. The rates might need to be higher.
They haven't figured out what the new rate would be. They haven't filed that new rate with my office. We haven't reviewed that rate. And we're 45 days out from January 1.
Lindeen says it's not possible to think those plans could be reviewed and approved in that time.
No. I don't see how that could happen.
About 13,500 Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana plans were going to end. Spokesman John Doran says the company is considering the implications.
If we make the decision to continue offering 2013 plans beyond 2014, then we have a lot to do in a short amount of time.
You know, we've been moving along this course, and to have it change so quickly and try to figure that out, I think it does throw everything on its head.
That's Vice President of Montana Pacific Source Todd Lushing. Pacific Source has about 5,000 health insurance plans that were going to be dropped. Lushin says his company is looking to Lindeen's office for direction.
Our legal analysis is that we cannot make the decision, that the insurance company is going to have to make that decision.
Lindeen suggests individuals with the would-be canceled insurance plans should start to look through the plans offered on the Obamacare marketplace. She says in most cases, federal subsidies would allow these people to get better plans at lower costs. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
A pickup truck rear-ended a semi-trailer hauling cattle on Interstate 90 in southwestern Montana, killing a 29-year-old Virginia woman and injuring a man and a 10-year-old girl. The Montana Highway Patrol says a 29-year-old man from Virginia was driving the pickup when it hit the semi at about 4 p.m. yesterday near the Ramsey exit west of Butte. Trooper Cody Ruane tells the Montana Standard the collision occurred when the eastbound cattle truck illegally used the emergency crossover and pulled into the westbound lanes in front of the pickup truck. Ruane says the pickup hit the semi at interstate speeds and all three had to be extricated from the pickup. Their names haven't been released. The semi driver, a 47-year-old man from Kansas, was treated and released. The crash remains under investigation.
A 34-year-old Sand Cooley man has died in a one-vehicle rollover on Montana Highway 227 southeast of Great Falls. The Montana Highway Patrol tells the Great Falls Tribune that Jonathan Baliat was traveling north shortly after 4 p.m. yesterday when he drifted off the right side of the road, overcorrected, and lost control. The vehicle rolled several times, coming to a rest on its top. Baliat died at the scene. The MHP continues to investigate the crash.
A Billings daycare was shut down by the state this week while police investigate a criminal complaint made against the child care provider. Lieutenant Kevin Iflin tells the Billings Gazette that detectives served a search warrant at the house yesterday as part of an ongoing investigation. No arrests have been made, and Iflin declined to release any details about the investigation. Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services spokesman John Ebelt says the state terminated the facility's license yesterday because of the criminal investigation. He referred further questions to Billings Police.
A businessman charged with failing to pay golfers for hole-in-one prizes insured by his company has pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor charge and agreed to pay a Montana man $10,000 of a promised $18,000 prize. Kevin W. Kalenda didn't attend yesterday's hearing before Justice of the Peace Karen Orzek of Missoula. His attorney, Brian Tipp, entered a guilty plea on Kalenda's behalf to acting as an insurer without a license. Kalenda is a former president and CEO of HoleInOne.com, a company that collects premiums and agrees to pay cash prizes to winners of hole-in-one contests. He has been charged with failing to do so in several states. Kalenda was charged in Montana after Troy Pising was denied an $18,000 prize after hitting a hole-in-one during a 2010 golf tournament in Missoula.
Missoula has a new police chief, pending approval of the city council. Mayor John Engen has appointed Assistant Chief Mike Brady to take over the job when current Chief Mark Muir retires December 20th. Brady has been on the force since 1988 and has been Assistant Chief the last 5 years. He says outgoing Chief Muir has trained him well.
Chief Muir's been outstanding at including myself and other staff members in the progression of the department. And he's also been very instrumental in helping me learn the aspects of the budget and personnel challenges that come along with it.
One of the department's challenges has been an agreement reached with the Federal Department of Justice to improve the way Missoula police handle sexual assault investigations. Brady says meeting the agreement's goals is going well.
Captain Mike Collier, the detective captain, has been working side by side with Chief Muir. Mike will continue that effort as well as the rest of us. The trainings, our department has trained almost every member in the updated policy, the changes to the delivery of service, and fulfilling those obligations of our agreement.
Brady says the investigation and subsequent agreement have had a positive effect on how the department deals not just with victims of sexual assault, but all victims of violent crime.
We strive every day to provide the best victim response we can, and it's a continual learning process, and we can always do better, and as we are.
The new chief says the department also wants to improve its communication with the media and the public and will have a full-time media relations person in place by January.
It's very important for us to be able to address the changing needs with technology and the immediacy in which you need the information to get out to the community is something that we have to address.
Brady's appointment still must be approved by the city council. The new chief will oversee a force of over 100 officers and an annual budget of $13.5 million.
Montana courts will begin making the switch from paper to electronic filing next year. Montana Supreme Court Clerk Ed Smith says a pilot program will begin at the end of January or early February. Instead of filing paper copies of complaints, motions, and orders, attorneys and judges in select districts will begin submitting them through an internet-based electronic filing manager. The Supreme Court will be the first court to test the new system, followed by the Missoula and Mineral Counties. Mineral County Clerk of Court Kathleen Brown says electronic filing should mean a reduction in cost and lag time in sending and receiving documents. Access to the new electronic filing manager will be limited to judges, attorneys, and court staff. The public will still have to go through the courthouse.
Two fossilized dinosaur skeletons found on a Montana ranch in 2006 are going on the auction block in New York City. They're expected to fetch between $7 million and $9 million. The nearly complete skeletons are billed as the Montana Dueling Dinosaurs. The sellers say the dinosaurs, one a plant eater, the other a meat eater, appear to be locked in mortal combat. They're being sold as one lot at Bonham's Auction House on Tuesday. The skeletons were discovered by a fossil hunter on a neighbor's ranch in an area where dinosaurs once roamed. The sellers believe one may be a close relative of Tyrannosaurus rex. The other may be a new species similar to Triceratops. They hope a philanthropist buys them and donates them to a public institution.
State wildlife commissioners have approved the release of up to 20 black-footed ferrets in central Montana to prevent the loss of a struggling population of the highly endangered prairie animal. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Non-Game Wildlife Management Bureau Chief Lori Hanuska-Brown says yesterday's action will follow the federal biologist to release the animals onto the UL Bend National Wildlife Refuge by the weekend. In this weekend's feature interview, Hanuska-Brown explains to Edward O'Brien why it's proving so tricky to reestablish the black-footed ferret in Montana.
Black-footed ferrets are a prairie species. They're found only in eastern Montana. They are very dependent on prairie dog towns. In fact, they're considered a prairie dog obligate. So they use both the burrows that the prairie dogs live in and create, and they feed almost exclusively on prairie dogs. And so what we do know about ferrets is that when prairie dog populations decrease or disappear for some reason, the ferrets quickly follow. Prairie dogs of all species are very susceptible to sylvatic plague. So that's been one of the largest threats to the black-footed ferret itself, is plague can come into a prairie dog complex and take out the entire colony. So it can remove almost all of the individuals, leaving the ferrets with basically not much to eat, if anything at all. And while they can travel, they have not been shown to travel very far. So once a prairie dog colony plagues out, the way we say it, it tends to take the ferrets with it.
What is this plague?
Sylvatic plague is just a non-native disease to North America, and it's real similar to any other plague, and it's particularly virulent with small mammals like prairie dogs, and ferrets themselves can actually get plague, but in the recovery efforts for black-footed ferrets over the last few decades, any ferret that's been released has been vaccinated for plague, and so they are put back onto the landscape with some sort of immunity to the disease. But it certainly was one of the reasons for the decline of the ferret in the first place.
Yeah, it seems like we're always trying to reestablish the ferret, and it never quite takes. It just sounds very complicated.
You know, it is complicated, and part of it is because of that dynamic system of the prairie itself and the prairie dog. And so, like many other systems, there's ups and downs in the populations. And when you're a species obligate like the ferret is, when all you really eat are prairie dogs and you need their colonies to live in, you don't have a lot of flexibility in your own survival. So yes, ferret recovery has been wrought with trouble and problems, and we believe we're getting somewhere at this point. It's been decades that ferret recovery has been underway. We know that in some sites where ferrets have been reintroduced, they have finally taken off for one reason or another. Their prairie dog populations are secure. They haven't had a plague outbreak in a number of years. The land ownership is secure to maintain the prairie dogs and tolerate the ferrets. And so certainly Montana restoration populations for black-footed ferrets have been very up and down during the restoration period. We've reintroduced ferrets into a number of different places, four different reintroduction sites, really, and the only ones hanging on right now are these populations at UL Bend. There's been a recent release at Fort Belknap, so there's ferrets there now. We don't know how long they'll persist. Ferrets released on the Northern Cheyenne a few years ago declined following a plague outbreak in the prairie dogs. And so when you look at the recovery map for ferrets in Montana, it is very up and down.
UL Bend, that's around the Malta area, is that right?
Yeah, so it's kind of the westernmost edge of the CMR Russell Refuge.
And where have, I don't know if you know this off the top of your head, where have black-footed ferret populations, any real success stories? I don't know, Wyoming, somewhere else?
There has been some success on reintroducing black-footed ferrets on white-tailed prairie dog colonies in Wyoming. There's been some success in South Dakota, and in Arizona, they've actually been quite successful. So these are different prairie dog species than what we have here in Montana. But again, it just really depends on the current ongoings of those reintroduction sites and what the plague outbreak is, what the land ownership is, and to some extent just the success of the ferrets themselves in terms of breeding ability and whatnot.
I'm going to ask maybe a bit of a hardcore question here. Some may not like it, but why do we keep trying? Why is this important?
It's a good question. So this most recent move by the Fish and Wildlife Service to maintain some ferrets up on UL Bend is really part of a big effort that's being undertaken by all of the ferret recovery partners to include the states within the range, to include the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. There are a number of really positive ongoings in ferret recovery right now, and it's a couple of different pieces in particular. One is the current testing of Sylvatic plague vaccine. So we actually have on the CMR Russell right now a cooperative test of the vaccine on prairie dogs to see if we can vaccinate prairie dogs against plague in a way that would allow ferret reintroductions to be more successful. The other thing we have going on is a push by a number of different agencies to get landowner incentive programs out to private landowners that are willing to maintain prairie dog populations and possibly consider ferret reintroductions. The third leg of the stool, if you will, is the Safe Harbor Agreement that has just passed through the Fish and Wildlife Service and been announced in the Federal Register. And a safe harbor provides a landowner some regulatory assurances that if they allow some ferrets to be reintroduced and those ferret populations fail or something on the landscape happens that means those ferrets have to be picked up and moved or something just doesn't work, the landowners aren't held accountable by the Fish and Wildlife Service under the ESA regulations. And so there's a number of different things going on, and we'd like to keep these ferrets up in UL Bend right now so that when more of those things come into place and we actually have some new tools, we've got some ferrets to work with.
So what's happening this weekend? 20 are being released, yeah?
20 are being released on UL Bend, and it's not really a huge deal. It's going to be what's called a hard release. The ferrets come up in little cat carriers. They release them on active prairie dog towns. Ideally, the ferrets pick a hole and go down to it, and then that's the last, really, the recovery team sees of them. They won't be monitored terribly closely during the winter, but certainly the refuge staff will go back out in the spring and try to get a count of survivors, and hopefully if they all make it, they'll be some breeding and some new population numbers a year from now.
Winter sounds like kind of a tough time to do this. Why winter? Why not spring or summer?
You know, these little critters are pretty hardy, and so they can, the success rate of a release now versus another time I don't think is really significantly different.
So they're not tagged or anything like that, just kind of eyeballing it?
Yeah, I think they all will be tagged. What they do with ferrets is they actually put a little pit tag in, just like you can pit tag your dog at the vet clinic. And so you wouldn't necessarily see an ear tag if you were to see a ferret. They've got a tag under the skin that can then be read by a remote reader, if you will. You can actually put a reader at a hole above ground, and as the ferret goes through it, the reader detects which individual that is. So the reader can tell you, even if you're not there when the ferret goes through it, that ferret number 45 has passed through this area on this certain date.
Well, it's amazing what technology is doing for these tracking methods. Huh?
Yeah, yeah. And remember, these are nocturnal animals, so you can't really go out and do daytime surveys with your binoculars. So for ferrets in particular, part of the recovery has just been designing these different methodologies for monitoring so that they can keep tabs on the population.
Last question, and I guess that would be, is this an expensive effort, and is it worth the expense, do you think?
You know, it's not an expensive effort to Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. This is all being funded by the recovery budgets of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And again, a lot of ferrets have been reintroduced on the UL band without a terrible amount of success right now. But to keep the population from blinking out entirely, there were ferrets available from the Ferret Recovery Center, which is in Colorado. Those ferrets didn't have any other places to go because some other release sites that had been scheduled had plagued out with prairie dog losses. And so there were ferrets available. You know, I don't have a real budget number, but at this point it really requires a truck from Colorado to come up with 20 ferrets, let them go, see what happens over the winter, and then again there'll be a survey effort in the spring out there by refuge staff, but that's conducted regardless of this release. It is important to note, because that's where we'll certainly see some criticism, is this is a Fish and Wildlife Service-led effort, and so it is on the backs of the ferret recovery effort. It's all federal. It's not any state dollars going into this. We're involved really just as a cooperator and in attempts to maintain good relationships with surrounding landowners and county commissioners and letting them know what's happening. And so all our role really is just to let the commission know, and then we write a transport permit for the ferrets to come through the state.
Lori Hanuska-Brown of Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, really appreciate you taking time to visit with us today.
All right.
Now for this weekend's forecast. Across our listening area, there is a winter weather advisory in effect for snow and wind, and it's in effect from 9 p.m. this evening until 11 a.m. on Sunday. West of the Divide tonight, there is a lake wind advisory in effect until 9 p.m. for the Flathead and Mission Valleys. There is also a winter storm warning in effect until 11 a.m. Sunday for the Kootenai-Cabinet region, the West Glacier region, and the Lower Clark Fork region. Tonight, snow and rain is likely. We expect lows in the mid-20s to lower 30s. Tomorrow, snow is likely with highs in the 30s to lower 40s. And on Sunday, it should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow and highs in the upper 20s to mid-30s. In central Montana, there is a high wind warning in effect until 9 p.m. this evening for the Rocky Mountain Front. There is also a winter storm warning in effect until 11 a.m. Sunday for elevations above 5,000 feet for the Rocky Mountain Front and central and southern Lewis and Clark County. Tonight should be cloudy with a slight chance of snow through the night and lows 25 to 30 degrees. Wind gusts could reach up to 60 miles per hour. Tomorrow, expect snow through the day with areas of blowing snow in the afternoon with highs in the 30s. Wind gusts could reach up to 55 miles per hour in the afternoon. And on Sunday, expect mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of snow and highs 25 to 30 degrees. And in southwest Montana tonight, it should be cloudy with a chance of snow and lows 25 to 30 degrees. Saturday, expect snow and highs in the 30s. And on Sunday, it calls for mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of snow and highs 25 to 35 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Dr. Tom Roberts.
Those of us who attended the annual Montana Healthcare Forum last week in Helena were privileged to hear from Dr. Paul Grundy, who is IBM's Global Director of Healthcare Transformation, among many other distinguished positions. He had a number of messages for us here in Montana, but one of them was particularly profound. IBM, he says, will never move jobs to a state that does not expand Medicaid to cover poor people. Health costs are the second largest component of labor expenses after wages. The higher the cost for health care, the lower the profits for the company. When IBM pays a dollar for health coverage for its employees, 20 cents of that dollar now supports medical care for people who have no insurance. Dr. Grundy made it very plain. IBM and other large companies know that the uninsured still get medical care even when they can't pay for it. They may get it late, and they may get it in expensive places like emergency rooms and hospitals, but they still come into our medical system. They still use our resources. Someone has to pay, and the answer about who pays is obvious. Our hospitals and other providers simply have to charge the rest more in order to make up for the folks who cannot afford the care they receive. The people who pay for the uninsured are the ones who have medical insurance. Since essentially all large businesses provide their employees with health insurance, those businesses are actually paying for the uninsured through higher insurance premiums. This, of course, leads to lower profits. IBM understands this. It's really not very complicated. States that don't use available government funds to pay for medical care for poor people will have higher insurance premiums. According to Dr. Grundy, who sits in the boardroom, choices are being made about jobs based on this understanding. And it doesn't take computer scientists to get the picture. This is not just IBM. Jobs are not going to be coming to Montana if we can't be competitive with healthcare premiums. It's not a big step to see where this is going. This is not just about companies that might come to Montana. It's about businesses that are already here. Not taking this available federal money makes us a donor state. Our taxes will be supporting medical care for poor people in other places. But worse than that is the fact that we are also making our own businesses less competitive. By increasing the amount of money they spend on health insurance, we are directly taking money out of those businesses. Money that could be spent in better ways, by paying better wages, or by lowering overhead, or by providing more money for expansion to create new jobs. The issue of Medicaid expansion is more than just a question of helping people to get the right care at the right time in the right place. It's more than creating better health and preventing personal financial ruin. It's also very much about whether we are going to have a state where jobs come and are created and where we can pay people a decent wage. It's about whether our businesses can be competitive and survive and prosper into the future. We heard at the forum that many business communities and Republican governors and legislators around the country understand this issue. Despite their reservations about Obamacare, these folks are smart enough to see the writing on the wall. If they don't get on the bus, they're going to be left in the dust. They are busy right now creating their own state versions of a health care program for the poor uninsured people in their state. This is not always along the lines of simply expanding the existing state-run Medicaid insurance. Some are putting these poor people into private insurance through the marketplace with versions of health savings accounts and copays to ensure consumer participation and payment. Lots of options are on the table. The federal government is not telling these states what they have to do, but is working with them to allow each state to do what is right for themselves. This is a tremendous opportunity, and right now Montana is sitting on the sidelines. This issue is too important to ignore. It's time for us to get into the game and stop blaming Obama or the Tea Party for our inaction. There is too much to be done, and it's up to us to act. Now is the time. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Tom Roberts.
Dr. Tom Roberts is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Madeline Beck.
And I'm Connor Ballantyne. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.